I want to talk a bit about Eliphaz, because he is the first person to start speaking in the whole dialogues with Job. And, of course, he was coming from the idea that, look, Job, you're suffering, therefore you must have sinned, therefore you need to fess up and repent. We are better than you because we're not suffering. And the whole point of the final appearance of God and what he says is really to correct the friends whom he says have not spoken what is right concerning me. One of the themes that I think I detect in Eliphaz's argument is that he seems to be saying that Job is being hit by supernaturally controlled evil. He starts off in Job 4:18 saying, "Oh, look, God doesn't put any trust in his servants and he charges his angels with folly." And he takes it further in Job 22, where he seems to be talking about some force of darkness that is on Job's case. And he talks in Job 15:15 about sinful angels living in an unclean heaven. Well, no, this is not what the Bible teaches. All the angels are obedient to God. And God is completely in control. And that is what the prologue really shows, that this Satan or adversary figure appears, but God gives this figure all the power. And in the end, Job says, "The hand of God has touched me," and says, "Have pity upon me, O my friends, because God's hand has touched me." And in the end, his family come and comfort him over all the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. So these wrong ideas are deconstructed within the book of Job. And it's sad, really, that surface-level readers of Job like to read the prologue and say, "Oh, there you are, see, there's a Satan figure out there." When actually the whole point of it is, no, that's what people like Eliphaz believed, that, Satan's got it in for you, there's sinful angels on your case, Job, shows you sinned. The whole point of it is, no, there is absolutely nothing out there that is not under God's control. There are no sinful angels. God is in control. If you are encountering this idea for the first time, you might like to look up my book, The Real Devil, where I talk in more detail about why angels don't sin and there's no actual being called Satan in the commonly accepted sense, sort of out there in the cosmos bringing disaster in the people's lives. It is all of God. But for now, I just want to talk about the huge comfort that brings, that absolutely everything is under God's control. It's not as if evil comes into our lives and we're like, "Oh, God, help me." And God, like, "Oh, whoops, you've got sort of evil angels on your case, or you know, sinful angels. I'll come and bail you out." Okay. And come on, God, hurry up. As if we are spectators at a show, and up there in heaven there's this massive sort of conflict between good angels and bad angels. Not at all. There is no conflict. God is king in heaven, and before him, all the angels, all the power in the cosmos, in all existence, is completely in his hands. Now, this is a huge comfort when you are hit, as Job was, out of left field by disaster. In one form or another, it could be illness, it could be terminal illness, it could be things going wrong, find your partner's having an affair, or your kids do something awful to you. These things happen. And when these things come out of left field, this is God. God is in this. This is the comfort. It is not as if he is fighting off some other set of powers. He is in this. And you notice that it says in verse 5 of Job 4, Eliphaz says to Job, "Now it's come on you, you faint, it touches you, and you are troubled." Now, touch is exactly the word used by the Satan in Job 1 and in Job 2, 5, where Satan says, if Job is touched, he will renounce God. And Eliphaz uses that same word, and that's why I think that the Satan effectively becomes the friends. This Satan or adversary figure appears in the early chapters, Job 1 and 2, and then disappears from the narrative. And who replaces the Satan? Well, the friends. So, perhaps that Satan in the prologue actually represented the thoughts of the friends. And the fact that, as I say, the language that Satan uses about touching Job is then repeated by Eliphaz would rather indicate that. And the point is being made. People like Eliphaz were blaming Job's suffering on some external cosmic Satan figure, and actually they are the Satan, and God was empowering them as he did the Satan figure, however you wish to understand the Satan figure. God was all completely in control. So then, all the way through, the friends put up false arguments, and those arguments are deconstructed. And yet, Job comes to realize how wrong they are only through experience. Like Eliphaz says quite often, isn't the integrity of your ways your hope? In other words, if you live a life of integrity, well, that's the basis of your hope. And Job, through his sufferings, feels he now has no hope. He says that so often, I have no hope. My hope is dried up like a tree, etc. Bildad seems to push the same point, saying that the hope of the hypocrite will perish, and Job has been saying he has no hope. And yet he thinks about it, and he realizes that because he is a believer, then he does have hope in his latter end. And he expresses this, of course, so beautifully when he says, I know that my Redeemer lives and shall stand on the earth at the last day. Okay, my integrity is not having any apparent reward in this life. Okay, but it will do, because integrity will have a reward. And if it's not going to be now, it must be then. There must be a latter day, a last day. And I think that is why we focus, should focus, upon the last day, upon the coming of Jesus, rather than trying to get justice and the recompense for righteousness in this life. And I think that the book of Job was perhaps rewritten under inspiration for Judah in captivity, who likewise, apparently, had lost their hope. Ezekiel 37:11 says their hope was cut off. And yet, Jeremiah 31, there is hope in your end. Zechariah 9, they were prisoners or exiles in hope. And it's the same with us. We apparently in this life have maybe not much ahead. Nothing ultimately really to hope for. I mean, what is your hope for a better house, a better car, a better job, good life for your kids, or whatever it is that your hope is? All that rather dwindles and diminishes as you get older. And so people in the end are left in old age with no hope. And the past was better, the present is not very good, and the future is awful in prospect. Whereas for us, we have the hope ahead. And that means that the past was awful. Today is, yeah, better, because we have hope. And tomorrow will be wonderful. And so that human tendency to look back and think the past was better is not for us. We have hope. And in the end, through his sufferings and through the deconstruction of all these wrong ideas the friends were coming out with, which many of which were probably ideas which were half in Job's mind himself, through all that, through the presence of so much wrong thinking, such as that there's a Satan being out there, there are evil, sinful angels out there, and all this sort of stuff, through coming through all that, one comes finally to know the love of God and to see that there is this wonderful hope in our latter end.